Gimel Amud Bay is about two-thirds of the way down the Amud by the two dots. We've been talking about the question of when a girl, a Yisoma, is entitled to Mizonis out of the estate versus when not. We said that her father technically does not even have an obligation. A few days ago, we learned that he technically doesn't even have an obligation once she's past 6 years old to support her b'chlal, and if he does, it's a matter of tzedakah. But once he passes away and the estate is in the hands of the Yerushim, then they're required under Tnoi Ksuba to support her. And we talked about, is that until she becomes a begeres, or until she, or until she becomes an arusa? We had a machloekas Rav and Levi about that. So now the Gemara is going to bring several other questions about various circumstances whether a girl is entitled to mizonis out of the estate. So first, simon de gavri, the simon for the men, for the amaroyim who are going to be asking these questions, is the word sak zoraf, which is it's an acronym for, or semi-acronym, for the names of the amaroyim. Rav Sheshes is first, is the shin or sin, then it's going to be Rav Shlokish, which is the Kuf, Rav Elazar, the Zion, and so forth. We're going to have five Amiroyim. And then the questions are going to be Meya Naviyid Mashmiya Arusa Va'ansa. Those are five circumstances that they're at, each one of them is going to be asking about whether Mizornas apply in that case. There's a sefer called Lamnatseach LeDavid by Rav David Pardo, and a very important Sardish Rav a couple of hundred years ago. It's a sefer of Chidushim on Gemara, but at the end of it, he goes through all the places in the Gemara where you have simonim like this, and he explains, he gives a deeper explanation for what that simon is. So here he explains, many of them he explains that they hint at various aspects of the golos of the Jewish people and how they're almost like coded messages to Hashem to take us out of it, and coded messages to us to take it seriously and so forth. So here also he explains the word sak literally means sackcloth. Zoraf is an Aramaic word that means to scratch or to cut. So representing, in other words, the kind of mentality that a person should have, that you wear sackcloth and you're ready to tear your clothes over the difficulties of the galus. And he explains that the expressions over here, the mayan of the yidma, etc., refer to how we Jewish people rebelled against miyana, like we refused to listen to Hashem, and therefore we wind up in the situation of like a Yavama who's in limbo, and like an Arusa where we haven't yet consummated our marriage with Hashem, and Onsa where we're being forced by the Goyim to do things that we're not supposed to, and therefore it's like a coded message to us to realize how bad Golus is and do something about it, and a coded message to Hashem to take us out of it. So the Gemara starts off. The first question is, Bo Minei Rav Sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes the question, M'ma'enas yesh l'mezoynes or ein l'mezoynes? A girl who does miyun. As we learned in Yevamos, that a girl below bas mitzvah, below the age of Shtei Cyrus, was married off by her brothers or her mother. So she's able to do miyun and make it as if she was never married, and then she returns home. So now the question is, suppose that she did that. She was married off as a Yisoma, now still as a Tana, because that's when she can do Miyun. She does Miyun. She returns back home. Does she resume getting Mizonis until she becomes a Begeris? Do we say that her Miyun takes away the Nisuin as if they never existed, so therefore she's like any other Tana and is entitled to Mizonis? Or maybe the fact is there was Nisuin, and for a while she was out of the Rishus of her father, or in this case of her father's estate. So Rav Sheshes says, you've learned it, there's a braisa that bears on this. A braisa says, almana bevesavia, when you have an almana in her father's house, meaning that there had only been erusin, so we're not talking about katana over here for the moment, this braisa is first talking about a regular almana, a grown woman. So she's only had Eiris. Oh, actually, no. I mean, we're still talking about not grown, per se. She's still a Naira, let's say. But if she's an Almana only from Eirisin, had there been Nisurin, then even Levi, that we learned yesterday, would say that she forfeits Mazonis. Or Grusha Bavesavir, or the same way if she's a Grusha, and she's in her father's house, the Shemeres Yavam Bavesavir, or the same thing if she's a Shemeres Yavam, her husband died and she's waiting for the Yavam to do Yivam or Chalitza, all of those Yeshla Mazonis, so all of those are still entitled to Mazonis, Eina Bavesavir, but if she's not in her father's house, Eina Mazonis, then she does not get Mazonis. So that's the Tanakama. And Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says that if she's in her father's house still, then she gets Mizonis. If she's not in her father's house, she doesn't have Mizonis. Now, it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying the same thing as the Tanakama. So that's the question. Rabbi Yehuda Hainu Tanakama. Aren't they saying the same thing? Ela lav, so what wouldn't it necessarily have to be? Mama Enes, Ikabenayu. The argument between them would be about the case of Mama Enes. The Tanakama Sava Isla. So the Tanakama is going to say that she still gets Mazonis. So he's going to say the same way as an Almona, Bavei Savia, and so forth, gets Mazonis where there was only Eresin, the same way a Mama Enes, even though, unlike in the case of the Almona and the Grusha, there had not yet been Nisuin, here there was Nisuin, but she did Mirun, and she made it as if the Nisuin never existed. Rabbi Yehuda Sava Lasla. Rabbi Yehuda seems to say that she would not get, because he would say, Oida Bavei Savia, if she's still in her father's house in the sense that she never left it with Mazonis, after all, a Mama Enes, we're talking about normally that there was this story, which means that she actually left her father's Rishus at one point, and she left the Rishus of her father's estate at one point. She was married, but now she did Miun. Rabbi Yehuda is using the expression Oida, if she's still Bavei Savia, implying that if there was any break in that, then not. So it comes out, says Rav Sheshes, that it would be a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. And as usual, the halacha would be like the Chachamim, because the halacha would be like the Rabbin. So the answer would be that she would have Mazonis. So again, Rashi says that the Braisa, the Almona Bavei Savia, is talking about specifically from Eirusin. Because Rashi points out, again, that if there was Nisuin, how could she be getting Mazonis? The fact is, she was out of the Rishus. And the only question is, as far as Mama Enes, because unlike with an Almona or Grusha, where there was Nisuin, and it doesn't change the fact that there was Nisuin all the time until now, all it means is the Nisuin, or the death of her husband, means that from now on she's not married, unlike Mama Enes, means that it's as if she was never married in the first place. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos has some questions about that. And so Tosfos ends up bringing that Rabbeinu Tam explains that, no, Almona Bavei Savia can even mean that she was married, but she was widowed or divorced while her father was alive. So in other words, according to Rashi, in other words, the scenario of Almona Bavei Savia or Grusha Bavei Savia is that she's a Naira. She was married, fully married with Nisuin. No, according to Rashi, there's no Nisuin. It's only Eirusin. Then she was widowed, or then she was divorced. And she returns to her father's house because there had not yet been Nisuin. According to Tosfos, we're talking about she had been fully married. She actually left the house, but then she became an Almona or a Grusha while her father was alive. So then we would say, since when her father dies, she's still living back at home as a result of the divorce or of her husband's death, then therefore the Tanakama is saying that she's entitled to Mazonis, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying that not. So it would still come out what Rav Sheshes is saying, that it would be a machlokas of the Chachamim and versus Rabbi Yehuda, whether in the case of a Mama Enes she gets Mazonis. That was number one. Question number two, Boi Reshlokish, Bas Yevama Yesh LaMazonis, Ay Ein LaMazonis. When the daughter of a Yevama. So, the Yevam married the Yevama, and they had a daughter. So now, when her father dies, does she get Mazonis out of the estate or not? On the one hand, Kivin de Omamayok Subosal Nichse Baile Arishan, since we learned in Yevamos that the Yevama herself, when Yibum is done, she doesn't get a new Ksuba from her Yevam. Instead, the Ksuba is charged against the Nechasim of her first husband. And after all, her first husband didn't have any clause in his ksuba that he would support a daughter from another brother, which is what this is after all. So therefore, less law. So we could argue that the daughter does not get mizonis. Or you could say, on the other hand, we learned in Yevamos that suppose that she didn't have a ksuba from the first one. One obvious possibility could be if the first one didn't have any money and therefore she can't collect a ksuba from him. And we talked about that in Yevamos, various other circumstances where there could be, but whatever the case, the point is that suppose she doesn't have a ksuba from the first one, then the Chachamim made a takana that she does get a tznai, that she does get a ksuba and tznai ksuba from the second one, from the Yavam, therefore Isla, so maybe the daughter who is being supported under Tanoi Ksuba should have Mizonis from the Yavam. So what is it? And the Gemara leaves it Teku. Tosfos discusses, by the way, the Yavama herself certainly has Mizonis one way or the other. Even if we say the Ksuba is against the Nechosim of the first husband, still she's entitled to Mizonis from her new husband, the Yavam. The only question is about the daughter. Okay. Next, Boy Rav Elazar, Bas Shnia, Yeshla Mizonis, or Eima Mizonis. What about the daughter of a Shnia? So we learned in Yevamos, you have the actual Arayas that are listed in the Torah, and then you have Shnia Arayas, the various second level relatives that are also only Drabanan. For example, in a Torah, a man's not allowed to marry his mother, but he would be allowed Minatora to marry his grandmother, his mother's mother, Midrabanan, he's not allowed to. So suppose he did, he was over on that Takonis Chachamim, and they got married, and they had a daughter. Yesh Lamazonis or Eim Lamazonis. Now, does this daughter get Mizonis out of his estate or not? On the one hand, Kibin de Lesla Ksuba, the mother does not get a Ksuba, therefore you could argue Lesla Mizoni, therefore you could argue the daughter does not get Mizonis, the mother doesn't get a Ksuba, because this is a marriage that the Chachamim didn't want to happen. So therefore the Chachamim were not Misakin a Ksuba, so therefore you could say that therefore the daughter, so therefore supporting the daughter is under Tanoi Ksuba, therefore that doesn't happen either. Or maybe you could say, Ima de Avde Isora. It's one thing her mother did something which was Osir, marrying someone she wasn't supposed to, Kansur Rabbanan. Then you could say the Chachamim penalized her by taking away her Ksuba. Ihi, but as far as the daughter, the Loi Avde Isora, she didn't do anything wrong. Loi Kansur Rabbanan. Maybe you could say the Chachamim did not penalize her and she's entitled to Mizonis. And again, the Gemara leaves it as Teku. An interesting point, actually, that the Meiri brings up. We learned previously that we had the case yesterday of a woman who remarried based on one aid. One aid came and told her her husband is dead. She remarried without checking into it thoroughly. Her first husband turned up, and we said she forfeits a lot of things, including she forfeits her ksuba. There, the Gemara asked the question whether also ksubas benin dichrin is forfeited as well. Or is it not? We didn't bring up the point there that the sons didn't do anything wrong, and why should they be penalized? Why over here is the Gemara bringing up that point? So the Meiri says, because the difference is, he says, over there, the one who primarily did something wrong was the mother. She should have been more careful before she remarried. Instead, she jumped into remarrying on the basis of only one aid without checking the situation out thoroughly. So therefore, we have no problem saying that even though it was she who did wrong, that her sons maybe should get penalized as well. We shouldn't necessarily penalize her second husband and say that, or either of her husbands for that matter, and say that we should have to take, so that they should have to take some of the Yerusha and earmark it for the boys, because they didn't really do something as wrong. On the other hand, here with the Shnia, both of them did something wrong. They both knew that this is a Shnia Larayas, and they got married anyway. And therefore, so the question is, on the one hand, should we say therefore that she did wrong, and therefore maybe that carries over to her daughter? Or on the contrary, should we say he also did wrong, therefore maybe we shouldn't be having Rachmanos on his estate? Maybe we should be forcing then saying that out of his estate, there's going to be paid for this daughter. And again, the Gemara left it as take. Another one, Boy Rava, the fourth one in the list, Rava asked, Bas Arusa, Yesh Lamazonis, say Ein Lamazonis. What about if, so he did Erusin with a woman, then before doing Nisuin, they had relations, which they're not supposed to do. They have to wait until the Nisuin. By the way, the Rambam holds that if at that point they were to do Bia L'shem Nisuin, then it would count. So, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So according to that, we would have to say that they did Bia specifically not L'shem Nisuin, only L'shem Znus. Anyway, so now she had a daughter. So now the question is, if the husband dies, Yesh L'mazonis, say Ein L'mazonis. Does the daughter get Mazonis or not? The question is, given the Ithlok Suva, we've talked about before, and we're going to talk about in more detail later on, that we know the ksuba is in effect from the Nisuin, but sometimes you had people who used to write out the ksuba even during the time of the Erusin, and then it already takes effect from the time of the Erusin, or Rashi brings, there's actually a machlokas later on in the Masechta, whether the takana of ksuba applies to an arusa, or whether it only applies beginning from the nisuin. So either all Gemara is going according to that, or all Gemara is talking about where they did write out of ksuba during the erusin. So now, do we say, given the isla ksuba isla, so now, since the mother then has a ksuba, because the ksuba in this case is in effect from the erusin, then the daughter also gets a mazonis. Oduma, or maybe kiven de leitakinu rabbanon ksuba ad shas nisuin. The chachamim only said that in principle the ksuba is only supposed to be written at the time of the nisuin. So like this, they jumped the gun and wrote the ksuba early, but maybe therefore less. Well, maybe you could say that tanai ksuba also don't take effect until the time when the ksuba is supposed to take effect, which is normally during the time of nisuin. And again, the Gemara leaves it as teiku. Rishonim didn't bring an explanation from the Ravid that what we're talking about over here is that he did end up fully marrying the mother. So we're talking about that she wasn't Arusa. He had relations with her. He fathered a daughter. And then after that, they got married. So now eventually Huxuba goes into effect. But the question is, do we say that it wasn't really in effect when this daughter was conceived? Or maybe does it not make a difference? And the fifth one, Boira Papa, Bas Anusa Yesh L'mazonis, Ein L'mazonis. What if a man raped a woman, a Naira specifically, and we know the Torah says, as we learned in the previous parak, that he has a mitzvah to marry her if she and her father are agreeable, and he's never allowed to divorce her. So now, would the daughter get Mazonis or Ein L'mazonis or not? Tosfos actually points out, why does the Gemara wonder about the Bas Anusa? The question should really be about the Anusa herself, whether she gets Mazonis. And in fact, there are Rishonim who learned that the question would apply to the Anusa herself. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Alibid Rab Yosi b'Yehuda Loitzi Boilach. Now, if you're asking a point, now, we have to establish the question, when he's Ma'anis, a woman, and then he marries her, as the Torah says, is there a Ksuba or not? So we talked about in the previous parak, a machlokas on that subject. So I'll leave it to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda Loitzi Boilach. If you go according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda's opinion, who says that she has a ksuba, then there's no question. He says that an anusa does have a ksuba of 100, so not 200, because the fact is when he married her, she wasn't a basula by definition. Nevertheless, though, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says, even though he already paid her the knas, as we learned in the previous parak, nevertheless, that doesn't exempt him from giving her a ksuba. She still has a ksuba if he dies. Now, he can't divorce her, because the Torah says he's not allowed to. But if he dies, then Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says, nevertheless, she's still entitled to a ksuba of 100. So therefore, point to him, obviously, if there's a ksuba, then there are tanoi ksuba, and tanoi ksuba includes supporting their daughter. The question is, kitibori lacha libid rabban. The question really is, which we learned in the Gemara previously on Daf Lamed Tes, that the Chachamim had said there's no need for a ksuba, he can't divorce her anyway, and the whole point of the ksuba is that he shouldn't feel so easy to divorce her, so here it shouldn't be necessary. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda said, yeah, but he could start harassing her until she finally says, you know what, I'm tired of this, I want out, I want you to divorce me, and then he is required to divorce her, so we don't want to do that, therefore by imposing a ksuba, then that makes him less likely to try to do that. Anyway, so again, according to him, the point is there is a ksuba, so obviously there are tanoi ksuba. Kitiboy lo halibid rabbanan. the question that Rav Papa would be having would be according to the Chachamim. The Ami Yotza Kesef Knasa B'Ksubasa. They say that the money of Huknas gets balanced out by Huksuba, or the other way around, really. In other words, she paid the Knas, and that takes care of the Ksuba. Now, at this point, there's no need for Huksuba anymore. The amount he paid was 50 shekel, which equals 200 zuz, which is equivalent to the ksuba of a, which is equivalent to the ksuba of a basula. So now there's no ksuba is needed after that. He's already paid it out before he ever married her. So now what do we say? On the one hand, kibin de lesva ksuba lesva mazoni. On the one hand, since the mother has no ksuba, therefore the daughter maybe doesn't get the zonus, because no ksuba means no ksuba. Or after all, you could say, what's the reason behind the ksuba in the first place? So it shouldn't be so easy for him to divorce her. In this case, again, he can't divorce her because the Torah says he's not allowed to. So therefore, that doesn't take away from the tnoi ksuba. So the ksuba itself, they weren't the second, but maybe she has all the other tnoi ksuba, and that would include supporting the daughter. And again, the Gemara leaves it as teku. Most of these, pretty much all of these tekus, since we're left with, so all of these tekus, it means, in other words, we can't necessarily prove that the daughter is entitled to mizonis. Therefore, the usual rule applies. I'm motzi mechaveil of araya. And anyway, also we're trying to collect from Yisoyim in all these cases. And when it comes to Yisoyim, we never collect from that. Even in a case where from a regular person, we might collect based on a suffix from Yisoyim, we don't. So the result is in all these cases, the daughter does not get mizonis because of the suffix. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, another one of the Tnoi Ksuba is at Tehei Yosfa Vavesi V'chola. We said that the Almana will continue, she says, you the Almana, if I die first, will continue to live in my house and will continue to be supported from my Nechosim as long as you live as an Almana in my house. And we said, even if he didn't write that into the ksuba, that is still one of the tnoi ksuba, and it's still in effect. So the Gemara says, Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef taught a braisa that the wording of the Mishnah, when it uses the word bevesi, is very precise. It means bevesi, beloi bevixi. The word bevesi suggests a normal house, a normal sized house. You think about it. She's going to be living there. The Yoshim are also going to be living there. Now, in a regular house, fine, there's room enough for it. They can, the same way as when the father was alive, she and her husband had the use of the house. They had a room in the house, and they had the use of the rest of it. And the Yoshim had their own rooms and their own areas in the house, and then you had the common areas. So now, if the house is big enough for them to continue living together, then yes, then that's the tnoi ksuba. But not the Vixi. The word Vixa means a small house. Rashi brings from Gemara in Shabbos where the word Vixa is a contraction of Bei Aksa, which means a narrow house, a narrow hut. So in other words, if the house is really too small for them to all live comfortably in there, then the Yoshim have the right to tell her that she needs to leave. Because where the Tanai Ksuba is that you'll live in my house, implying that she doesn't necessarily have the right to live in this biksa, in this small crowded house. Actually, Tosfos points out. So one way of understanding it is, in other words, because the word bevesi is repeated. We said in the Mishnah that the clause has the word bevesi repeated in it. He says you will be able to live in my house and be supported from my property as long as you are living as an almana in my house. So the implication is that she lives in the house only when it's a real house, not when it's a small, crowded place. But Tosfos points out there can actually be a case where she gains from that, because usually, by default, we say she does get to live in the house the same as her husband did. So if the Yoshim themselves have other nice houses, then on the contrary, she can say to them, it's true, it's too crowded for all of us to live here together, but I will get the house, and you guys have your own houses to live in, and you don't kick me out. As opposed to when they themselves don't have houses, or they don't have big houses of their own, then we're saying over here that they would have the right to kick her out. Ava Mazoni Iskla. But Rabbi Yosef says, even if she's not living in the house, even if it's a case where it's a biksa, and they have the right to tell her to leave and find herself another place to live, she would still continue to get mazonis. We don't say that because the Mishnah had said, because the Ksuba said that she'll be supported when she's Bevesi, implies that if she's not living in Bevesi, she doesn't get mazonis. No, we don't say that. We're actually doushening, Rabbi Yosef is actually doushening from the extra word Bevesi, that it means, in other words, not only when you're in my house, not only when you're in the physical house, but as long as you're living as an almana. There are different ways, actually, that we've shown him, understand, discuss within what Rashi is saying, what he means, which part are we learning from, what are we learning from the double word Bevesi? Are we learning Rabbi Yosef, are we learning the first half of Rabbi Yosef's din, that if it's a small house, that they can kick her out, or are we learning the second din, the second half of the din, that she does get mazonis regardless? Anyway, that's the point of Rabbi Yosef. Ma'abar Rav Ashi, I'm after the mazonis nami leskla. Ma'abar Rav Ashi says that no, she wouldn't even get mazonis, because he learns that Bevesi means literally she has to be living in the house. If she's not living in the house, because the Yoshim had the right to kick her out, then she also forfeits mazonis. But the Gemara says, v'les hilchsek ma'abar Rav Ashi, the halacha is not like him, the halacha is like Rav Yosef, that she does get mazonis. Okay, now, at what point does she forfeit mazonis? Now, we said in the Mishnah that she's entitled to mazonis as long as she's living there as an almana. So the implication is that once she's over her almana status, that she remarries, then she's not getting mazonis from the estate anymore. So let's talk about when that kicks in. So the Gemara says, Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel, Tavur li Nosev Nispaisa, if she was proposed marriage and she accepted, Eila Mazonis, then she no longer gets Mazonis, because once she accepted a marriage proposal, then she's not Megar Amanusa. She's not living as an Amona anymore, because now already she's an engaged woman, even though they didn't necessarily do the Kiddushin yet or anything, but she already agreed to it. So now at this point, she doesn't get Mazonis from the estate. So the Gemara says, Holo Nispaisa Yeshla Mazonis. So you're telling me that if she didn't agree to get married, why should she get mazonis? Let's consider, when somebody proposes marriage to her, there could be two reasons why she turns him down. She could say, because of the covet of my husband, I still want to stay an almana out of respect for the memory of my husband. In that case, then surely she's still an almana because of her husband. She should still be entitled to mazonis. As opposed to, though, there could just as well be where somebody proposes marriage to her and she turns him down because she says, you're not my type. So why should she still get mazonis in that case? On the face of it, when she says, you're not my type, or whatever, that you're not suitable for me, she would have been perfectly willing to get married if Mr. Wright came. So why should she still be entitled to mazonis when at this point she's not an almana because out of respect for her husband anymore? So why are we saying only nispaisa, that only if she accepted the proposal does she lose mazonis? And the Gemara says, in fact, yeah, Amar Rav Onan, l'didimi fauchali minei de Mar Shmuel. Rav Onan says that Mar Shmuel personally explained to me that it depends why she turned him down. Amra machnas poini baili, if she says, I don't want to get married out of respect for poini, my husband, I still remember him, and I can't get married to anybody else, as long as he's still in my thoughts. Yes, from his earnest, then she's still entitled to his earnest, because then the fact that she's remaining an almana is still because of her husband. On the other hand, machas b'nei odim she'en mehugon in law, but if she's not getting married, if she says, I'm not getting married because the shidduchim that are being proposed to me are not suitable for me, ein la mazonis, then at that point she doesn't get mazonis anymore, because she's made it clear she would like to get remarried. She's already over her husband, and the only reason she's not is because she hasn't found the right shidduch yet. Okay. The Gemara goes further. Omer of Chista, zinsa ein la mazonis. What if she was mezaneh? Then also, Rav Chista says she forfeits mazonis, because obviously if she's mazana, now, being an almana, it's not, obviously doesn't carry the consequences of being mazana as an eishes ish, but still, the fact that she does that shows that she's over her husband, although she doesn't particularly care for his memory anymore, otherwise why would she be doing that? So therefore, Rav Chista says that's reason enough for her to forfeit mazonis. Amr Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef says also, Kichala upirkasa, if she starts putting on eyeshadow and makeup, there's different explanations what pirkasa is, but it's basically some kind of makeup. So also, she's demonstrating she wants to make herself attractive again to get remarried. So also, a mazonis. So also, Rabbi Yosef says in that case, then she no longer has mazonis from the estate. Because again, it means that she's ready to get remarried, and she doesn't care about the cupboard of her former husband. So the Gemara points out, Manda Amazinsa, now Rav Chista, who says that if she was Mizana, she forfeits Mizonis, Koshiken Kichlo Pirkasa. He would say all the more so if she starts putting on makeup, then she's demonstrating that she's ready for the next one. On the other hand, Manda Amma Kichlo Pirkasa, but according to Rav Yosef, who says that if she puts on makeup, she's forfeited Mizonis, he would say Avazinsa Isla. He would say, however, if she was Mizana, she's still entitled to Mizonis, my time a Yetzer Onsa. Because then we can say the Yetzer, she really desperately wants to have a man in her life, and therefore it can be considered a sort of onus, obviously not totally an onus, and it's still her choice whether to be Mizana or not, but we can call it a certain degree of onus, and that does not cause her to forfeit Mizonis. On the other hand, putting on makeup and whatever is not that kind of onus, it's not the indirect. It'll lead to her getting remarried and having a man in her life, but it's no, she's not yet at that point. So therefore we wouldn't consider that onus. So in other words, according to Rav Chista, if she was either Mizana or put on makeup, then she loses Mizonis. On the other hand, according to Rav Yosef, only if she's putting on makeup and beautifying herself, but not if she's Mizana. But the Gemara says, "Bless Hilchsa Kachol Hani Shmeitza." The halacha is not like any of these statements about when she forfeits Mizonis. Now, Tosfos brings that it might mean all of them except now. What did we have so far? We had three statements. One was Tavur li Nosev and Ispaisa. One was where somebody proposed marriage to her and she accepted. And then we had within that we had Rav Onan saying that even if she turns down the proposal, if it was because she says he's not suitable for me. Number two, we had Rav Chista's Zinsa. And number three, we had Rav Yosef's Kichalo Pirkasa. So Tosfos learns that when we say the halacha is not like any of these, we mean the last two. We mean about Zinsa and about Kichalo Pirkasa. Tosfos learns that when you have the case of where they proposed marriage to her, and she accepted, or she turned it down because she said, you're not my type, then the Gemara is not saying the halacha is like that. Then Tosfos says the halacha, in fact, would be that she forfeits Mizonis. Because after all, Tosfos says, we have Rav Onan being told personally by Shmuel to explain that. On the other hand, most Rishonim don't learn like that. Most Rishonim learn that Kol Hani Shmaita means all of them, including that one about Tavua. So even if they propose marriage to her, whether she accepted or whether she turned it down, nevertheless she doesn't get Mizonis. Nevertheless she still gets Mizonis rather until the actual Erusin take place. Once the Erusin take place, then yeah, she loses Mizonis, and then at that point either her chasen has to support her or she has to support herself. Now, according to most Rishonim, that's how it is. And definitely, everybody agrees that when the Gemara is saying the halacha is not, means as far as when she's mizana or as far as when she puts on makeup. Ela ki hoda amar of Yehuda amar Shmuel. However, the halacha is like what Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel. Hatevas subasuba beistin. If she demands her ksuba in beistin, ema mizonis, then at that point she doesn't get mizonis, because why is she coming to beistin and demanding the money for her ksuba? The pashtus, because she wants money in order to be married. So then she's already showing that she's ready to remarry. So then therefore, so at that point she doesn't get mizonis anymore. Now in Shulchan Aruch it does mention that if, for example, let's say, if the Yoshin are not giving her proper mizonis, after all, they have a responsibility under Tanoi Ksuba to support her, if they're not doing that properly, if they're being stingy with her, and therefore she has to come to Beis Din to collect her Ksuba, plus she have money to live off of, then we're not talking about that. We're talking about where they're supporting her the way they're supposed to, and she's saying she wants the Ksuba because she wants some extra money, and why would she want that? An obvious reason is because she wants to get remarried. There's a couple of other cases it talks about in Shulchan Aruch also. Another interesting one is if they convince her that somebody wants to marry her, and it turns out they're only doing that in order to get out of paying her her bizonis, and it turns out it's not true, then also she doesn't forfeit her ksuba because she accepted that proposal. Anyway, So after that, she lost her based in aim on the Mazonas. So if she goes to based in to demand her ksuba, then she doesn't get Mazonas from that point on. So the Gemara says, the loy? Really? No? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, mahr ksubasa, if she sold her ksuba, as we talked about yesterday, that she could conceivably sell the expected future value of her ksuba, whether to her husband or whether to somebody else, or umishkin ksubasa, or if she made her ksuba mashkin, if she put a lien on it for something else, to buy something else, or osik subasa apusikula acher, or if she made her ksuba an apusiki, which is also a type of mortgage for somebody else. So she took specifically, she took the karka, which is supposed there was, as we're going to talk about later on, there can be that a certain piece of karka was specifically earmarked that one is going to be what her ksuba is paid out of. Now suppose she took that karka and mortgaged it for something else, for somebody else that she borrowed money from, saying that if I default on the loan, you will be able to take that property, which was supposed to be used to pay off my ksuba, and you'll be able to take it for yourself. So in all those cases, after, if she did it to somebody else, ain la mazonis, then she doesn't get mazonis at that point, because then she's showing that she doesn't really need her ksuba anymore, implying hani ain, so only if she sold her ksuba or mortgaged her ksuba or whatever, but the implication seems to be that if she just demanded her ksuba and based in, then she would still be entitled to mazonis. So how is Shmuel saying that she forfeits mazonis at that point? And the answer is the reason why the Braisa doesn't mention that is because Hami, being the based in, being the based in. Because the difference is the Machra ksubasa and Mishkana ksubasa applies whether she did it in based in or whether she did it as a private transaction outside of based in. So then, because those involve actually collecting the ksuba, and since she sold or mortgaged the ksuba, she's demonstrating, therefore, that she's willing to forfeit the ksuba, therefore she also forfeits mazonis. But tevas, the vastin ain, shall be vastin loy. But when we're saying that if she demands the payment of the ksuba, that she forfeits mazonis, that would only be if she makes that demand by taking them to vastin, but not if she does it outside of vastin. If she goes over to them and says, you know, it's been a long time, where is my ksuba? That doesn't change her status as far as mazonis. But if she takes them to vastin, which is a more official thing, and says, I want my ksuba, then at that point she forfeits mazonis. They obviously have to pay her ksuba as soon as possible after that in order not to leave her stuck. But at that point she forfeits mazonis. And again, as we said, it brings in Shulchan Aruch that if they're actually not supporting her the way they're supposed to, and she's needing the ksuba because of that, then that's different. We're not talking about that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, we said that there was a difference in the nusach of the ksuba, and therefore in the tnai of the ksuba, between the people of, on the one hand, we had the people of Yerushalayim and of Galil, and then we had the rest of the land of Yehuda. So they wrote two different things. In Yerushalayim and in the Galil, they used to write the nusach that we just said, that you will get to live in my house and be supported out of my property, as long as you are living as an almana in my house. Meaning, in other words, according to that version, it's basically up to her. Once she does something, like we said, she accepts a proposal of marriage, or she demands her ksuba and bastin, or whatever, then she forfeits her mazonis. So it's all up to her. The Yoshim can't do anything to change that. On the other hand, in the rest of Yehuda, they had a version that they wrote, until the Yoshim want to give you ksuba, meaning, in other words, that they would say that it's up to the Yoshim. Anytime they want to pay her off her ksuba, then that's it. Then they pay her ksuba and she doesn't get mazonis anymore. So who is that? So the Gemara says, so it's about Rav Omar Halacha ka Anshe Yehuda. Rav says the Halacha is like the people of Yehuda, so it's up to the Yoshim. Anytime they want, they can give her Huxuba, and that's that, and they don't have to pay her any more mazonis. Ushmulam Halacha ka Anshe Galil. Shmuel says the Halacha is like the people of the Galil, so therefore they don't have that option. It's up to her when she's ready to get remarried, or when she comes to Beis Din to tell them that she wants the Huxuba. So the Gemara says, Bavel v'chol pavadohan nehug grav. In Bavel and all the environs, all the cities nearby it, they used to follow Rav. The word Bavel over here does not mean the country of Bavel, because both Rav and Shmuel lived in Bavel, and the Gemara is going to contrast over here with Nahada, which is also in the country of Bavel. What we mean is the city of Bavel. Now, you have the city of Bavel that's mentioned in Tanakh, where they had the Tower of Bavel, and afterwards where Nimrod had his capital, and so forth. Eventually, that city was destroyed. You have Nevi'im, especially the Novi Yeshaya talk about that it eventually was destroyed. Like the way Hashem overturned Sodom and Amorah, it became a complete ruin, and it remains like that. Adar Yemazeh. But you have a nearby area that was also called, that took over the name Bavel, and here we mean that area. We mean that in particular, the Gemara elsewhere mentioned that there was a city nearby called Bursif, which afterwards took over the name Bavel. So we mean that area and all the environs around it. They followed Rav. Rav's yeshiva was in Surah, which is not far from there, so therefore Rav was their closest posek, and therefore they followed him. On the other hand, Nahada and all the environs of that followed Shmuel because Shmuel was the Rosh Hashiva in Nahada. So the Gemara gives an example. Hahi bas mechuza dehavas nisivul in Nahada. It happened once that a woman from Mechuza had been married to a man from Nahada. Now Mechuza is close enough to Bavel that it's considered that it's in the territory where we said the halacha is like Rav. On the other hand, Nahada, we said that is in the territory where the halacha is like Shmuel. So also the Chamed of Nachman. So they came to Rav Nachman to discuss this point. In other words, the Yoshim are ready to give her Suba and tell her to take a hike. She wants to still continue living as an Almana. She's not ready to remarry yet. So what's the story? Can they pay her off for Ksuba and their potter from Mazonas or not? So they came to Rav Nachman for a din Torah on that. Shama l'kola the bas mechuzah, he could tell by her voice, by her accent, that she was from mechuzah. Amalahu, so he says to them, well, since she's from mechuzah, Bavel v'chol pavadahan nehu karab. In Bavel and all the environs of Bavel, all the suburbs and areas near Bavel, they follow Rav. Therefore, the halacha would be like Rav, which in turn is like the Anshe Yehuda, namely that, yes, the Yoshim are able to pay her huksuba unilaterally, and that's it. She doesn't get mezonis anymore. But people told him, beholden Nahada Nasiva. On the other hand, she's married to a man from Nahada. Shouldn't we follow that? Omrulahu, he says, Yehachi Nahada, b'chol pavadah, nehu k'shmul. Well, in that case, we said Nahada and all of its environs follow Shmuel. So in that case, yes, we would have to follow Shmuel, and we would have to say that it's really up to her when she's ready to not be an almana anymore. Which we're showing him say, we learn from that, therefore, that when a man marries a woman and brings her to his hometown, the pashtus over here, they were living in Nahada, which is his hometown, then yeah, it means that we take over his minhag. So the Gemara says, Ad heicha nahada, how far does nahada extend for this purpose? And the answer is, Ad heicha besagi kabad nahada, as far as the kav of nahada is used. You have a measurement called a kav, which is mentioned all over Shas. In different places, they had slightly different sizes of the kav. There was one particular size that they used in nahada, and the areas around it. Any place where that cab is used, as opposed to some other local cab, then that's the area that's considered Nahada for this purpose. The Rif brings that there were Rishonim before him who wanted to say, well, therefore, maybe the implication of this Gemara is that the Halacha is like Rab, because the Gemara is saying only, we have to define Nahada very particularly, implying only within that area is the Halacha like Shmuel, but everywhere else in the world, the Halacha would be like Rab. On the other hand, the Rif says not, and Tosfos also brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that not, that no, the halacha is like Shmuel, because in general, with Dinim Mominus, the halacha is like Shmuel. The reason why the Gemara is defining the Hadar specifically is because historically in Bavel, that's how it happened to be. The majority of the country of Bavel followed Rav, and only in the area around the Hadar did they follow Shmuel. But in the rest of the world, the halacha would be, as it usually is, that the halacha is like Shmuel and Dinim Mominus, and that's how it is. Okay, it's fine. So now we have a discussion about the point. When an almana comes to collect her ksuba, what gets charged against her ksuba? Almana, Rav Omer Shomin Mashallah, Rav says we have to evaluate what she's wearing. So in other words, and not just what she's wearing, we mean in other words her whole wardrobe, all the clothes that she has, we have to consider how much those are worth, and then we deduct that from the ksuba payment that is being paid out to her. So in other words, while her husband was alive, he had been buying her dresses and things. So now we take that and we deduct that from the value of the ksuba that says Rav, that we deduct that from the value of the ksuba that the Yoshim has to pay for. Shmuel says we don't. Shmuel says we don't. The clothes that she got all this time, she gets to keep those. That was just one of the things. Her husband had to support her, which includes you have to buy clothes for her, and therefore those don't get deducted from the silver payment. And the Gemara says, now they would have the opposite opinions when it comes to a locket. A locket is a temporary worker that you hire to help with the harvest, and he lives in your house, he's boarding in your house during that time. So now, let's say, when you have this guy hired on a temporary basis, so you bought him clothes during that time. So now, it would be the other way around. Shmuel would say that we do count those clothes towards his salary, and then, so now when you're paying him, you deduct the cost of the clothes that you got. Rav would say you don't. Now, why would that be the difference? So Shita Mekubetzis brings from a Mahadura Kama of Rashi, from an earlier version of Rashi, that says like this. On the one hand, so when it comes to the Almana, Rav is saying Shomin Mashallah because why did the husband buy her clothes in the first place? Because he figured they're going to be married for a long time and she'll wear those clothes during her marriage. So therefore, so Rav says now that the marriage is over, okay, it's not her fault. Her husband died, but still, nevertheless, we can still deduct those from the ksuba because he never would have bought those if he knew that shortly afterwards he's going to die and the marriage is going to be over. On the other hand, when you buy them for your locket, you know to begin with that he's only there on a temporary basis. So therefore, Rav would take the view that in effect, if you bought him clothes, then you bought it for him as a gift, kind of. Whereas Shmuel would take the view that as soon as they got during anything that was bought during the marriage becomes any clothes that you bought her becomes hers. So therefore, so you can't deduct that from her ksuba. You can't say it's like a contingent thing and you say that it's hers. It's hers 100%. On the other hand, with a locket, we would say that it's not like that because you don't buy clothes for the guy knowing that he's going to be staying there forever. He's not. You don't buy him presents like that. And therefore, Shmuel would say that you charge it against his salary. On the other hand, Rav Kahana masni v'chein b'lokit. Rav Kahana says no. Actually, Rav and Shmuel, the same opinions that they hold as far as the ksuba and the clothing, the same way they would hold as far as the locket. Rav, who says that the clothes are charged against the ksuba, would say that they're also charged against the salary of the locket. And Shmuel, who says that not, would say that not in the case as well. Umanach basimana, and in fact, Rav Kahana made a simon to remember this. He used the expression yasma va'armalta, a yosem or an almana, which those are always paired together in the Torah. We have all over the place in the Torah. A gera yosem va'almana. So here, the yosem and the almana, shalach upuk, strip them and send them off. Not literally strip them, but in other words, the point is that their clothing, in effect, belongs to the yosemim, and therefore they can deduct it from the ksuba payment. But the point is, he's putting the yosem and the almana together, and we're using yosem to stand in for the locket over here, because in the same way as a yosem, like is an orphan. He doesn't have very much of his own. The same way the locket doesn't really have very much of his own. He's being hired as a temporary worker. So therefore, Rav Kahana put them both together in the same sentence and says both of those can be stripped and sent away, meaning in other words that their clothes in effect belong to the one who gave them to them, and therefore they get deducted. So they don't actually take them off. But the point is that they get deducted from their salary or from their ksuba. So the Gemara says, Omer of Nachman, even though we learn in a Mishnah, which we're going to quote in a second, that follows Shmuel, nevertheless, Rav Nachman says, Hilchas HaKavasei de Rav. The halacha is like Rav, that the clothes do get deducted from her ksuba payment. What's the Mishnah that follows Shmuel? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, Echad HaMakdish Nechasav, whether a person is makdish all of his property and donates it to Hekdesh, the Echad HaMarech HaSatmai, or he declares a neder that he's going to make, that he's going to pay his own erech to the Beis Mikdash, to Hekdash. And we know that if he can't afford the full erech, then the gizborim, then the treasurers of the Beis Mikdash, have to go figure out how much are his assets, and they take that in payment of it. So what are considered his assets? So either way, the Mishnah says, Eimloi loibik sus ishtoi, they don't have any claim against clothing of his wife, veloibik sus banav, or against clothing of his children, veloibik sevash et savan lishman, or clothes that were dyed in their name, meaning that he had clothes that were dyed in order for his wife or his children to wear, even though they didn't wear them yet. The loy v'sandolim hadashim shalokach lishman, or new sandals that he bought for his wife or children, again, even if they didn't wear them yet. So we see from that we're saying, in effect, that his wife's clothes are not part of his property. They're considered to be her property. Well, that would fit with what Shmuel is saying then, that they don't get deducted from her ksuvah, no more so than any other assets that she has get deducted from the ksuvah. Well, omalei rovel of Nachman, well, if in fact we have a Mishnah in Erchin that follows Shmuel's opinion, then why are you saying the halacha is a grab? And Rav Nachman answers him, on the face of it, kishmuho rehita. If you looked at the Mishnah superficially, it would seem to, as we just did, it would seem to go according to Shmuel. It's interesting, you know, you have you have this very useful word, l'chora, which we're all familiar with, and people use it all the time. This is the only place in Shas where this word appears. So it means, on the face of it, the Shittim Kovetis actually brings an interesting thing from Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah, who relates it to the word kor, which literally means ugly. So it means if a person acts in an ugly way, they only look at things superficially, they don't delve in like the way you're supposed to when you're learning Torah, then you're going to think that Mishnah goes like Shmuel. But Rav Nachman continues, Kima Einasba, but if you analyze it, then you're going to realize that actually it implies that the halacha is like Rab. Because my timer, because why are we saying in that Mishnah that the clothes continue to belong to the wife and therefore the gizborim of Hekdesh can't take it away from him? Because he acted law, when the husband was mapping the clothes to his wife, so whether she wore them yet or not, Adaita will make him kameh. He had in mind that she's going to stay married to him. He never would have been Machner having in mind that she could take them and end up going out and leaving the marriage. So in this case, we're okay, he dies, it's not her fault, but nevertheless, the fact is that the marriage is over, so therefore we can say that he never would have had in mind to give her these clothes and that they should become hers in the first place, to the extent that we shouldn't deduct them from the ksuvah. So therefore, that Mishnah actually strengthens Rav's point. In that case, they're still married and they're still going to remain married after this. Therefore, yes, the clothes belong to her and the gizbarim can't touch them. But over here, where the husband died, and or divorced her for that matter, and we're talking about collecting the ksuvah, then yes, we can say that the implication is like Rav, that the clothes do get deducted from the ksuvah payment. The Gemara tells in this connection, Kalsa the Bay Bar El Yashiv, there was a daughter-in-law of the household of El Yashiv. So this household of Bar El Yashiv, actually, this household is mentioned here and there in Shas. They were a very prominent family. So here there was a woman who was married to one of the men in that family, and her husband had died or divorced her, and Havakatavuk Subasim Yasmi, she took the assignment to Beis Din to demand Huksuva. Have a commandment, who the Beis Din, so she wasn't just that she was Teveya. She told them, I want my ksuba. She took them to Beis Din for it. So they said, Zila la milsa, the Tizli Hafi. It would be beneath our dignity that she should go dressed as she is. It would look bad. She was married to somebody in our household. Why is she wearing such cheap clothes? So they convinced her that she should dress more richly. So she went and dressed and covered herself with all of her fancy clothes. And then they went to Beis Din. Also, and now they came to Rabina for the Din Torah. So he says, the halacha is like Rab, the Amana Shomin Masha'Allah, who says that with an Amana, we figure out the cost of what she's wearing, or in general of her wardrobe, and we deduct it from the tzuvah. So in other words, they managed to find a way that it would be known to the Beis Din how much she actually has. The point is, I mean, Beis Din would still try to figure out the value of her wardrobe, but like this, when she's actually wearing it to Beis Din, it becomes much more obvious. It's much easier for the Dayanim to figure out, because it's right there in front of them, and also it means that she can't then deny it. We're going to learn later in the Masechta, by the way, that when an Almona is ready to collect her tzuvah, she has to swear a shvua that she hasn't previously collected any part of it. So she'd have to swear a shvua anyway, but still, the Yisoyimim, Rishonim explain over here that the Yisoyimim use the strategy in order that, just in case, she might fudge things with a shvua or whatever. Like this, she can't, because the Dayanim, because Ravina and his Beis Din can clearly see the value of the clothes she's wearing. Some more examples as far as Yerushas. There was a man who said, when he was a Shchiv Marash, shortly before he passed away, he said, the Nidunya, that a certain amount of Nidunya, a certain amount of jewelry and clothing and whatever, should go to my daughters. Zol Nidunya, then what happened? Before they had a chance to give it to her, the value of these things went down. So the question is, let's say at the time when he made this tzava, these things were worth 1,000. Now they're worth only 900. Is she entitled to full 1,000? So she would be entitled to all of the jewelry and whatever that he mentioned, plus an extra 100 to make up for the loss in value. Or is she just entitled to that jewelry and everything and that thing? Omrim, Idiba Oven is pulling over Yasmi, sort of Idiba Oven says, the prophet goes to the assignment, they just give her the jewelry, whatever it's worth right now, and they don't have to worry about the fact that the value went down. On the other hand, the Ritzvah talks about if the value went up, then she would get the jewelry, and she would get the jewelry that he said, and they would be losing out. Another example, Ahuda Amalahu, there was a Shchiv Marah before he passed away, who gave instructions, Arba Meya Zuzi Min Chamra Libras. I want 400 Zuz of such and such wine to be given to my daughter, implying that the wine is under a shibud for that. So in other words, he's not saying to give her the wine itself, but he's saying the wine is mishubud, that out of that, 400 zuz worth should be sold, and 400 zuz should be given to her. Iyaka chamra. Now the value of wine went up. So again, the question is, does that mean that next? So let's say, for example, before it would have, before 100 gallons of wine would have been worth 400 zuz. Now the price went up and 400 zuz will buy you only 90 gallons of wine. Does that mean she's only entitled to what we get out of 90 gallons? Or do we say she's still entitled to what we get out of the 100 gallons? And that means she's getting extra. Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Chol Yasmin. So Rav Yosef says the prophet goes to the Yisoyimim, since he didn't say to give her the actual wine, just the value. So it means, yes, we sell at current market value 400 zuz of the wine, and that's what we give her. And again, you have the what if the wine goes down in price, then we say that they lose out. Another case, the Gemara says, Kribe de Rav Yochanan Havalahu Itas Abba. Rav Yochanan's relatives had an ex-wife of their father who needed to be paid huksuba to have a kamafsida mezoni. She was wasting food. She was eating a lot more than expected. So like this, we said throughout this parak that they were required to pay her mezonis, that they were required to pay for her food, but she was eating much more than normal, and they're concerned about the whole Yerusha is going to go, is going to disappear like that. So they came to Rav Yochanan to ask what to do. He says, Izilu v'imru leila avuchain. He said to them, go and tell your, now apparently what it was is this was before, so obviously this was before the father passed away. So they're thinking ahead. What's going to happen? What's going to happen when he dies, and we're going to continue supporting her with mezonos? So Rav Yochanan tells them, Izilu v'imru leila avuchain. Go tell your father, deniyachad lo ara la mezonah, that he should reserve, that he should earmark a particular piece of land with a tzavas shchiv merah, that this will be what's going to be used for her mezonos. So now, Rashi brings like this. when it comes to the ksuba, so you have like this. Suppose a person writes a document giving away all the nechasim to his sons. Meanwhile, he also writes a document, in the same document or whatever, he writes to his wife that you get such and such character. Then, so then the Mishnah says there that then she gets that character, but she forfeits the rest of her ksuba. In other words, that character is the exclusive vehicle for her to get her ksuba. And if it's not worth enough, then tough luck. That's one explanation in Rashi. The second explanation Rashi says is that at this point, once he gives away all of his nechassim, then it becomes nechassim b'shabadim, and she can't get her mezonos out of nechassim b'shabadim, as we mentioned earlier in the parak. So anyway, so by doing that, then that way she's going to be limited only to getting mezonos out of that character. By the way, Tosfos points out, the other day we had a story with Rabbi Yochanan and relatives of his where he gave them advice and then afterwards he regretted and said, we made ourselves like Urchad Dayanim, we're being like lawyers, like we're not supposed to do. Why over here is he not bothered by that? The reason is, Tosfos says, because after all, it depends on her. If she, when the husband says, I'm designating a certain character for your mezonos, she has to be agreeable to that. If she doesn't agree, nothing happens. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan wasn't worried that advice would be to her detriment because she has the das on her own to decide whether she wants that. So the Gemara says, also the Kamei de Rish Lakish. So they came to Rish Lakish to ask, is this the right thing to do? Omalahu. So Rish Lakish tells them, on the contrary, Koshkin should reveal the Mazonis. On the contrary, if the father writes out and says that a particular field is for her Mazonis, it means that extra means she gets regular Mazonis. Plus, also, let's say the Yesonim don't give you proper Mazonis, then you can use this character to get the extra. Because otherwise, just for Mizonis, all of his property is Mishruba Jehu Mizonis. So therefore, the Shlokher says, this idea of designating one particular field for that doesn't help the assignment, that makes things worse for them. They're still required to give her the full amount of Mizonis that she regularly gets, and if, for whatever reason, at some point she finds even that is not enough, then she can use this Kauka to sell that and get even more. Omrule, so they said to the Shlokher, for Rabbi Yechanan, like Omahachi, Rabbi Yechanan didn't say it like that. Amalahu said of Yerushalakish tells them, I don't care. Zilu Havula, go give her the proper Mizonis as much as she wants. The Eloy, and if not, Mapikna Vahur Rab Yechanan, Unaihu. If not, then I will take Rab Yechanan out of Unaihu. Now the word Unaihu has a few different meanings. It can mean your ear, so it can mean literally I'll pull Rab Yechanan out of your ear. In other words, I'll make things very difficult and uncomfortable for you. It can mean don't think you can listen to Rab Yechanan. If you persist in listening to Rab Yechanan against what I'm telling you, then I'm going to put you in chayim. And unaihu can also mean your strength. In other words, you're relying with your strength on Rabbi Yechanan's pesach, but I'm telling you that's incorrect and you can't follow that. Also, the kamed Rabbi Yechanan, so they came back to Rabbi Yechanan to ask what to do. Omalavu, so he says, ma'asa, so what can I do? Shekinegdi cholok olai, the one who's parallel to me, the one who's of my caliber, always arguing with me. So I know I told you one thing, but Rish Lakish, who's fully of my caliber, is saying differently. I don't have the ability to argue against him. He has the right to argue against me, and if he passes in that way, then that's how it is. So the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rabba Bahu, l'didini fausha l'minei de Rabbi Yechanan. Rabba Bahu says, Rabbi Yechanan personally explained to me, it depends what loshin he used. Omer l'mizonis, if he says that this field that I'm designating is true mizonis, then it means riba la mizonis. Then it means, like Rish Lakish said, means that he's adding extra mizonis. He's saying, in other words, she's entitled to she has a shibud against all of the estate for her mizonis. In addition, she has this field as a backup in case she feels that they're not giving her enough mizonis. That's when it's a lamas, limizonis. Oma bimizonis, but if he uses the expression, it's in mizonis, then it means, in other words, that this is to pay the mizonis, and in that case, kotzat for mizonis, then we go according to what Rabbi Yechanan said before, that it means that he's fixing that only that thing is, that only that field, and the proceeds from it are for her mizonis and nothing else. So it means, in other words, when Rabbi Yochanan said before that he said "Diniyach lo ara limezona," either he was talking inexactly and he really meant that they should say that their husband should say "bimezona," like he's making the distinction every year, or after he heard what Rish Lakish held, then he changed his mind and said, you know, I still partially hold according to my original opinion, but we have to distinguish between the loshin that he used. Hadron aloch naira.